11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running, liftoff, we have a liftoff, 32 minutes past the hour, liftoff on Apollo 11.
Hey folks, it is Monday, April 6th, 2015, and you are listening to episode 9 of the Beyond the Handle podcast. I am your host, Alan, also known as @Slip on Twitter. That's Slip with five eyes, or Slip. Today's episode features yet another member of Winnipeg's Twitter community who does not live in Winnipeg. I have Art Middleton speaking with me. @GameTimeArt is his handle on Twitter. He also has a second handle, @GameTimeSmark, for those of you that want to follow his commentary on professional wrestling. He is a big Jets fan, and actually is a fan of a number of teams, the Jets being one of them, the Minnesota North Stars turned Dallas Stars, Houston Astros, San Antonio Spurs, Swift Current Broncos, and the question I asked of him, and that we will find out during the course of this episode, is, as a resident of Edmonton, Alberta, who has only actually visited Winnipeg one time to see a Jets 1.0 game, how do you become a fan of all of these teams? We had a really good conversation, and I hope that you do enjoy it. And with last week being WrestleMania 31, the second half of our discussion centers around his love of pro wrestling and a little bit on that show. And I have to admit, that's something that is near and dear to my heart as a fellow wrestling fan myself. Last week's episode featuring Suzanne Sexton, or @Suzaki the Amazon, continued to receive great reviews over the course of the week. I really enjoyed speaking with her. It sounds like a lot of you enjoyed listening. Thank you so much for listening and for providing both of us with feedback. And thank you very much to Suzanne for having joined me for the conversation last week. So without further ado, let's get into the conversation with Art Middleton here on Beyond the Handle. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 9 of the Beyond the Handle podcast. I have another great guest on with me today, all the way from Edmonton, Alberta. I have Art Middleton, also known as @GameTimeArt and @GameTimeSmark on Twitter. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good, Alan. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, we're talking on a Friday morning here. It's Good Friday, so it's I guess a good start to both of our days, and I see you have the Skype working nicely over there. I actually am getting a video feed of you.
Oh, are you? Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if I had video or not. So my lovely couch, my lovely blue couch.
And you've got the Jets blanket in the background,
yes,
which is good.
I have my Jets blanket in the background, which is that's my rally blanket, and sometimes I cry into it at the end of every game, seemingly lately. At least the last two, anyway.
The last two. We've got five left, right? So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see. Friday's the critical one, and I think that pretty much tells us. And, of course, this will probably air
Monday
after the Friday game. So, yeah, by then, I think we'll know kind of our fate. I think the Friday game is kind of the critical one. If we can't beat Vancouver, then I think we're hooped. But we'll see.
And your hometown team, the Oilers, didn't do us any favors last night.
I don't know if anyone really expected them to do any favors. It was kind of funny because I had people coming up to me in the last 2 days like, oh, you guys got to rely on us now. And I'm like, no, we're not relying on you. You're going to lose. But, you know, I kind of hope they'd put up at least a little bit of a fight, but they didn't even do that. So Oilers going to oil, I suppose.
Yeah, but, I guess so. So Game Time Art is the Twitter handle. Can you tell me the story behind the Twitter handle?
I joined Twitter back in 2007, I think, just as it was coming big, and I didn't really know what it was about, and there wasn't really a whole lot of people using it yet. So, originally my nickname was Lion Tamer, which is an homage to, Chris Jericho's, move in WCW. And, I went with that for a while, and I got tired of that nickname after a while, and it was, I think about 2010 or so, I was like, okay, I need a new name.
Okay.
And I wanted to use my name. At the time, I was still blogging and such, and I kind of believe in putting my name out there, and I didn't want to hide behind a moniker, and that was the other reason for switching from Lion Tamer. And I like sports, which are games, and I like video games, which are games, so Game Time Art seemed just like a natural fit. So, and that's kind of how I got that.
And you had a very good idea that I should have copied from you, which is that for your wrestling commentary, you have a second Twitter handle that you use, correct?
Yes. So obviously I anyone that follows me knows I live tweet pretty much anything I'm watching. And that included the wrestling pay-per-views, but of course wrestling is a bit of a niche thing, so I would lose followers, especially after pay-per-views. I would lose two or three, and I didn't blame them because, wrestling might not have been their thing. So I just figured, I'm just going to make a separate account and, we'll start another account and, that'll be just wrestling only. And, it was kind of funny because I at first thought if I was going to like try to closely associate that with my regular Twitter, if I was going to, just go Game Time Art 2 or something like that. Uh-huh. But then I started thinking, I'm a Smark. Smark is pretty close to art, and hey, there's something there. And then I just kind of ran with that. So
it seems to work out nicely. And for those that don't know what Smark is, do you want to kind of give the definition?
Sure. So there's two different, it's a combination of two words. There's a smart fan, which basically is a fan who knows wrestling is, predetermined. We won't say fake, but it's predetermined. And a mark is someone who acts as if it's, really, really, really happening. Like the characters are, like Sheamus, for example, mm-hmm. is a really big jerk in real life. So a smark is someone who kind of combines the two. So knows it's fake, knows that Sheamus in real life is not a big jerk, but, and still kind of acts like, wow, Sheamus is a big jerk.
Is willing to believe it, right?
Yeah, suspends disbelief, I guess, is the best term for it.
We're going to talk wrestling quite a bit, I think, in the later part of this. This interview, it was a big week. But before we get to that, a couple of questions that I wanted to know and that came from the questionnaire. The first one, have you lived in Winnipeg?
No, I've been in Winnipeg a grand total of one time in my entire life. Okay. And that was just to see a Jets 1.0 game, way back in the day. And then that was it. I haven't had a chance to get to Winnipeg for a 2.0 game. That was supposed to happen earlier this year, but we had to move, back in December. So that kind of got kiboshed. But okay. No, I've never, it's funny. People say you're a Winnipeg fan. Have you ever been there? And no, one time. And it was for a couple days. So.
And were you born and raised in Edmonton, or have you kind of made your way there?
I made my way there. I was born in Swift Current, Saskatchewan. Lived there for a few years. My parents moved us out to BC for a couple years, out to Powell River on the coast. And then I moved to Alberta, I think when I was 6. And then gradually through that time made my way to Edmonton. I moved here in 2011, actually, and lived here ever since.
And at any point in time, were you an Oilers or Flames fan?
Never. Flames fan, I think, for a little time whenever they fought or whenever they played the Oilers, I might have rooted for the Flames a little bit. But I could never cheer for the Alberta teams. They were so popular here in the 80s, and that's just not me. I don't like cheering for the popular teams. So my teams when I was a kid were Minnesota and Winnipeg.
Yeah, I saw that. And you have an interesting list of teams here, and the Swift Current one is now, I guess, explained. You mentioned the Broncos as being a team that you follow, so born in Swift Current, that makes sense.
Yeah, I kind of hope they were still playing hockey at this time, but they were done in four, so that kind of sucks.
And I'm seeing here, you've got the Jets, you've got the North Stars as a team that you've listed. Did some Dallas Stars work, so I'm assuming that's a spinoff of the North Stars. And then
yep.
I'm also seeing here the Spurs and the Astros, so I see a lot of Texas. Is there a specific thing that draws you to Texas, or is it just a random?
It was kind of random. It was funny because for a while there, yeah, it was three Houston teams. Oh, and then the Texans as well.
Okay.
And it also happened that Minnesota moved to Dallas, and that's when everyone's like, okay, all my favorite teams are in Texas. Maybe I should move there someday. No, San Antonio was a friend of mine in high school got me onto the Spurs, got me onto David Robinson. And that's how I kind of fell in love with them. And then they got Tim Duncan, and then it was game over for me there. Houston, the Astros were actually my first Little League uniform. I had a, my Little League uniform was the Tequila Sunrise, looking uniforms. And as a kid, I was just like, oh, I love these uniforms. Oh, this team wears them? Okay, I'll wear, that'll be my team. And I was, I've been a Houston Astros fan and Expos fan too, ever since. So.
And for the Astros, then, you've had a rough couple of years. The Spurs, though, not too bad. That makes up for it.
The Spurs have made up for pretty much every other team I cheer for. I think I mentioned that on my Twitter the other night, that no matter how bad the other teams do, I always seem to have the Spurs to fall back on for now. So,
and so what prompted the decision to become a Winnipeg Jets fan?
You know, it was just the energy of the city. Of all the Canadian teams that I liked, the only Canadian team I liked really was Winnipeg. I was, like I said, I was a Jets 1.0 fan. And when they had announced, or when the buzz started coming back, that they were going to come back with a Winnipeg team. And originally it was either going to be either the Coyotes or, it was late that we heard the Thrashers, but I just knew, I was like, you know, the only way I switched allegiances is if Winnipeg got a team or if Saskatchewan ever got a team. And Saskatchewan will never get a team.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as they even announced that Winnipeg might get a team, I was like, well, you know, and I started warning everyone, like, that Winnipeg is going to be my team. The one time I was there, I liked the city. I knew the fans were going to go nuts for it. I just want to be kind of part of that fan base that, you know, just was, you know, like they say, fueled by passion. I wanted to be part of a passionate fan base,
mm-hmm.
Like the Jets.
So if you, you know, living in Edmonton, can you kind of describe what the Oilers fan base is like, maybe in comparison to what you see the Jets fan base being like?
You know what? It's funny because the Jets fan base, and I think most people would agree, it's kind of a little bit self-loathing. A little bit. People might have noticed. And there's always an impending sense of doom. And I gotta admit, I even have that impending sense of doom. And I like to think of myself as more of a positive fan. But, and here in Edmonton, it just, fans seem to be resigned to their fate a little bit now. It's just, they're the Oilers. Kevin Lowe doesn't know what he's doing. McTavish doesn't seem to know what he's doing. Katz definitely doesn't know what he's doing. They're living in the past. And Oiler fans are just resigned to their fate, but they're still optimistic. Even this year, even now, it's like, well, this team's still fairly close, and we just need a couple pieces, and then we'll be a really good team. And I've heard that for 9 years.
Uh-huh.
And if it was Winnipeg, God, man, we'd be jumping off bridges and stuff, I imagine, as Jets fans. But Oilers fans, just, they never seem to lose hope that, you know, next year's the year and they'll finally get it together.
When I lived in Edmonton in 2001, so now we're talking 14 years ago, but
right,
14 years closer to, you know, a lot closer than today to the dynasty years, and this was both Oilers and Eskimos, and at that time there was still a lot of bravado in the city with regard to the sports history. Do you find that still exists, or is that kind of, has it only been getting snuffed out?
Well, I don't know. I think there's still a little bit of bravado there, and the moment the Oilers start winning, there will be a ton of bravado.
Uh-huh.
Oiler fans will be all over it. I'm sure of it. But right now it's very subdued, obviously, because they have nothing to point to. But there's still bravado in the city for the sports teams. The U of A Golden Bears are still pretty good. The Rush, the lacrosse team here, is really good. And I wish people in this town would get behind that.
Uh-huh.
Because they're a phenomenal team, and they're fun to watch. No baseball here yet, but we've always had a pretty good baseball teams here.
Oil Kings have done well, right?
And the Oil Kings have done well. They too got swept out before, but the Oil Kings recently have been pretty good. But this is an Eskimos and Oilers town, especially. It's mostly an Oilers town. It's not even really Eskimos.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and once the Oilers do start doing well, that bravado in Edmonton fans will be right back in, like we knew it in the 80s and 90s.
Now, a question about, I guess, Jets 1.0 here. There's obviously, I think, if you ask Jets fans who were the Jets 1.0's biggest rival, most of them are going to say the Edmonton Oilers. I am wondering, though, obviously Edmonton's number one rival is Calgary. But would you say that the Oilers even saw the Jets in the 80s as a rival?
Nah, not really. no, the 80s Oilers and even the early 80s or early 90s Oilers, they didn't see the Jets as a rival. They saw more of as a pest. I believe it was 90. What year was that? 91. I think the Jets, when the Jets took them, or 90. 1990. When they took him to a 3-1 lead. I think then Oilers fans were like, what the hell is this? what are these guys doing thinking they can actually beat us, even with Gretzky?
Yeah.
I think that was the closest that the Jets 1.0 ever got to the minds of Oilers fans as being a big rival. Beyond that, the Jets were more of an annoying pest. It was Calgary. In the 90s, it was Dallas, and the Oilers have never really had. But it's funny, though, as a Dallas fan, I can tell you it's almost kind of the same reverse thing for the Oilers. The Oilers fans consider Dallas a big rival. Dallas fans never really considered the Oilers a big rival in the 90s. They were just who we beat along the way to the playoffs. Except for one time, and that was annoying. And then after the next three or four series when they beat the Oilers, it was like, okay, these guys now know their place. They're beneath us. and yeah, so it was kind of the same thing as probably Winnipeg fans felt for the Oilers. It's just like, we're going to beat these guys one day, and that's probably what the Oilers were for the Stars there in the 90s.
Now, you mentioned that you were a lifelong Calgary Stampeders fan until the summer of 2008. Was there a particular incident that took place, or...?
I think it was just after a bad loss. I am not a John Huffnagel fan in the least, and he's a good coach. And I mean, obviously he's proven it. He's won a couple of great cups since then, but, I've never been a fan of his, and I think his teams are undisciplined. And if there's one thing I hate in football, it's just, it's undisciplined, teams. I actually hate it in hockey too, which, makes the whole Buffalo thing lately just a aggravating thing. Uh-huh. But, I think it was after a loss and the Stamps shot themselves in the foot a couple times with some late penalties. And I was like, that's it. I'm done. I can't cheer for a team that not only shoots themselves in the foot, but is so cocky about it. Like, oh, we're a really good team. Well, that may be, but you know, you're not winning a whole lot of games. And I think later that year they won the Grey Cup, or they got to the Grey Cup at least. So Stampeder fans, I think, should be eternally grateful for me that I got off that bandwagon. I was holding the team back, and they started doing well after I left.
You also have mentioned that you were a Minnesota North Stars fan, and again, how does that come about?
just basically because I didn't want to cheer for the Alberta teams. Edmonton's always been good, and I hated that. My friends would be, oh, we love Edmonton, we love the Oilers, and I could never rally behind some. To me, cheering for the Oilers in the 80s and 90s was pointless because they were so good anyway. There isn't really any drama to it. Like, yeah, you have Gretzky, you're supposed to win. I've always kind of gravitated towards teams that, you know, there was a little bit of a struggle there, and wins were to be savored kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like the North Stars. I like their jerseys and whatnot as a kid. And then, 91 happened and, the North Stars beat the Oilers in the conference final there, and I was hooked on the Stars at that point. I was like, that's my team. And I was able to run – I basically latched on that bandwagon before the series started, and then after I acted as if I was a big, proud North Stars fan the entire time.
And that was a fantastic run the whole way through, but unfortunately – the only highlights you see from that run are Mario Lemieux skating through the team and scoring at will in the finals, right?
Scoring at will, the whole team scoring at will. 7-1, I think, was the final in game 5 or whatever it was, 5 or 6. And yeah, no, it was. But you know, by that point though, I was kind of hooked on the team, and I got to know the. I did a quick study. I had a couple friends that were somewhat Minnesota fans, so it was fairly easy to get information. At that point, so John Casey was a favorite of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Neil Wilkinson. I thought he was going to be the second coming of, you know, the next big defenseman. I just thought he was a great defenseman, and I'm not sure what ever made me think that, but maybe it was his flow. I don't know. And then Mike Modano obviously was on that team, and he was an amazing player. Mike Gartner was on that team for a while. So yeah, I loved that team. And then when they moved to Minnesota and, I didn't think I was going to be much of a Dallas fan. So I kind of gravitated towards the Jets, and then the Jets moved. And there was no way I was really going to be a Phoenix fan. I tried for a couple months, and I couldn't get my head around the fact that it was now the Coyotes. And
you mentioned you tried to start a blog on the Coyotes, and then just on good old GeoCities, but you.
Yeah. On GeoCities, on the Coliseum. I don't know how many people will be able to reference that, but, and if there is, I want to hear from them, because I love GeoCities. I think I did 4 or 5 web pages on GeoCities. But yeah, no, I tried to start a Coyote site, and looking back on it, I guess it was kind of more of a blog than before blogs were really big. And I tried to write about after every game, and I would listen to their games on the radio. Kirk Kielback went with the team, and he's called the game. So that was the only easy part about it. They lost Tkachuk, or they got Tkachuk still, but they traded Solani away, and that was, you know, obviously the big draw for me for the Jets. And they brought in Jeremy Roenick, which didn't feel right, being that he was a former Blackhawk, and I couldn't get my head around that. So I was a Coyotes fan for a little bit, and then I just, you know, it was when, and I admit, it was starting to look like the Stars were starting to become a really good team, and they brought in Hitchcock, so I kind of hitched my wagon more to that one than the Coyotes. So
not a bad place to go. And then you did some writing for their SB Nation site for a couple of years, right?
Yeah, Brandon Worley started defending Big D, I think in 2009. And I was one of the first ones that he contacted. I had my own little Stars blog that was, you know, moderately successful with Stars fans. And he contacted me one day, said, would you like to join? And, you know, he says, I could use some more writers. So I did. And I did mostly game recaps and wrote on defending Big D for about 2-3 years. Worked with them on their podcast, actually hosted their podcast for a while when Brandon went to work for NBC Sports. So. Okay. Yeah, no, and it worked out well, and loved the guys there, loved writing about the team there, and then when Winnipeg came, I knew that I wasn't going to be a Stars fan for much longer, so I kind of jumped ship from defending Big D, and they figured I was going to join Arctic Ice right away, but I was pretty much done blogging at that point, because it's hard, and I this is where I feel for the Arctic Ice guys, is it's hard to be critical of the team and be a fan at the same time. Mm-hmm. I hated that. I used to do a thing for when I was writing for defending Big D. I do the game recaps, and then I would do the top three Stars, obviously, but I do the bottom three Stars. And more often than not, at the time, Chris Bartsch was my bottom Star of the game, and it was just because he played 7 minutes. He, you know, if people thought Thorburn and Slater are bad, Chris Bartsch is not good. And I was always, you know, pointing that out, that just like, I don't even know why this team has him. They never play him. He doesn't do anything for the 7 minutes that he's on the ice. He never creates a generation shot. He might get a hit. And then, it just so happened at the time that defending Big D got press credentials to, go in the Stars locker room. Okay. And, Brad Gardner and Brandon Worley was starting to hear from Chris Bartsch that, you know, you guys kind of give me a rough ride. And I was like, oh, well, that would be me. And I kind of felt bad because I'm sure Chris Bartsch is a great guy. But, you know, at the same time, you want to be critical. You want to be honest to your readers. The Stars weren't a very good team. And yet you're sending – and it's not like I could be there. I couldn't be in that dressing room to face up to Chris Bartsch myself, which kind of always bugged me.
Yeah.
That, you know, I couldn't, you know, show up to these players and say, hey, nothing personal. It's just – you're just not a good player on the ice.
That'd be a good way of putting it. And we've said, you know, on this show, even recently, there's been a lot said about Thorburn. And again, you know, Thorburn, the person, is obviously, you know, probably definitely a much better person than I am, and probably, you know, does a lot more for the city than, a lot of us who, yeah. who give him shit, but,
yeah.
On the ice, you know, stick to being a good guy. It's kind of the, that's your
strong point. although I like Thorburn, and I think Brian mentioned this a couple episodes ago, and Garrett had, and he mentioned how Garrett kind of mentioned, as a fourth line guy, I think we all love Thorburn.
Mm-hmm.
But as a fourth line guy, anytime they give him more minutes than a fourth line guy should get, then it's like, okay, now he's become a bit of a liability.
Uh-huh. So speaking, we'll get into Jets talk a little bit here. You'd mentioned, you know, that you're amused with the Pavs versus Hutch thing, but I wanted to actually ask you because it just came out this morning. And again, this is Friday. The Masterton, nominee for the Winnipeg Jets this year is Mr. Andrei Pavlik.
That's a little surprising to me. I didn't really see that coming. Maybe that was his reward for shutting up and not saying too much when he was delegated to backup duty, I guess. I don't know. I'm not sure what all he's had to really persevere through other than just criticism. And I mean, it's not like it's been completely unwarranted. I don't like blaming goalies for losses as it is. Not most of the time anyway. Pavlik is who he is. Hutchinson is who he is. They're serviceable goalies. They're not reliable goalies. I don't think either one will ever be a top flight, you know, guy you can run with to a deep playoff run type goalie.
Yeah.
Not like a Quick or a Crawford or anything like that, but they are who they are. So, you know, like the game last night, or the other night there, where Pavlik led in three, but I couldn't find any fault with him. And yet I still see people like, oh, Pavlik, you know, Pavlik wasn't good and, the save percentage wasn't good or whatever. And I kind of like, whatever. And it was the same with Hutch when he wasn't doing so well. And yeah, maybe he could have been better, but again, the team in front of him doesn't help him a whole lot either at times. And I always try to blend that, but yeah, the Pavlik is Masterton. Nominee is very interesting.
I almost think as much as like people like to blame each other on Twitter and call each other trolls, sometimes the biggest troll in the city seems to be the Jets organization because they'll do something and it's just like as soon as it happens and this, you know, there's this one today. Again, I always go back to the Thorburn contract last summer, but it's like I can't get to Twitter fast enough to see what the reaction is. And it just blows up.
That was one, yeah, just before we started this interview, and I kind of started seeing some of it, and I'll have to go back because I'm kind of missing it right now. I'm not really on Twitter right at the moment, but I'm sure there's a lot of hot takes. I'm sure RB18 is just thrilled with this pick.
Oh, yeah, that's where I heard it from.
Is that who you're
from? That's who broke it to me, yeah.
I haven't seen his Twitter feed yet, but I can only imagine he fully approves of this pick.
Oh, yes, of course.
So, yeah, no, and it's, yeah, this organization, and it's fun to cheer for this organization, because every so often you get the odd guys that's just, it's like, wow, this is happening? Really? We signed Thorburn? Really? We're going to move Bufflin back to forward, even though he's proven himself on defense? Really? We're going to put Party up at forward? Like, really? We're going to do these things? And for as great as this team is, every so often they just make the odd move that's like, okay, this is happening. All right. Let's see where this goes. It's not going to turn out well.
Makes things interesting.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing that you noted here, and I'm totally with you on this one, is just the drama from all fans, I think, behind every win and every single loss. You know, we had a loss this week, and all of a sudden it's like, no playoffs. Nope, not.
Oh, yeah. It's just like, oh, my goodness, we're doomed. The Kings tied us in the standings last night, and it's just like, we're out. We're done. You know, now that's over. And I'm sitting there like, there's still five games. And it's not like, you see LA's schedule and that it's, you know, it's not too terribly tough. Calgary's isn't much worse either. So it is going to be a tough road. But biggest advice I got from, I think, one of my Little League coaches was don't get too high on the wins and don't get too low on the losses. And I've always taken that to heart. So when the team loses, you know, it sucks. But unless it's, you know, like I said, unless it's Friday, then I think I might take that one a little bit more to heart myself. But, you know, the wins, and like I said, and it works both ways. I've seen it on wins where this is a playoff team and our club stats percentage went up by 30 points. And like, oh, that doesn't mean anything, guys. It's one win.
And so, it's not just up to us at this point. I mean, we're in a five game race now. Calgary's only got four games left, but I mean, Calgary loses to St. Louis yesterday, and all of a sudden the perspective completely changes, right? Now, you know, if the Jets grab a win tomorrow, they're back in it, and they hold on to, you know, their own fate, yeah. Right?
Exactly.
It's going to be all teams that are in this race that are going to determine what happens.
No, exactly. And we're in the playoffs now. This is the playoffs. We have basically, and I think one of the Jets even referred to it, we basically have a 5-game series coming up, and the goal will be to, I don't know if 3-2 will get it done. They could be golfing in April on that one, uh-huh. This is the playoffs now, and that's the wonderful thing about this time of year is, and I kind of get the being upset about losses and, you know, getting really ecstatic after wins, because now at this point, they really are critical. But I always had the problem when it was December or January, and it was like, oh, this team lost. Oh, we're screwed. This team won. Oh, this is playoff team, baby. So, I couldn't get with it then. I can get with it a little bit more now, but, it's going to be fun. And even if they lose to Vancouver, it'll hurt. But again, 4 games left. And at worst, after that Vancouver game, they might be 2 points or 3 points out of a playoff spot. Still, lots can happen.
You got to be within 1 point of Calgary by the time you get to that game next Saturday. That's ultimately exactly what you need to do. And then it comes down to one game.
One game. And then that will definitely be a playoff. And that will be so awesome. I think that's in Winnipeg, right? That'll be an awesome atmosphere. That will be playoffs.
And it's, we were talking about on the Joe Blow show a few days ago. It's a little frustrating only because it's scheduled as an afternoon game. And I don't even know if it's going to be a CBC game. Which is bizarre because it'll be two Canadian teams fighting for a playoff spot. But I think that the way it was set up was that, it wouldn't be. So I'm not 100% sure about that. But the fact that it's an afternoon game is a little goofy. But I guess when the schedule was made initially, no one thought this game would be of any consequence.
No one thought, even if the most positive person, and I mean, I like to think I am, even if the most positive person figured that this would be a critical game for the Jets, no one thought it would be for the Flames. Mm-hmm. So that these two teams are going to be battling for potentially a last playoff spot is amazing. The NHL's done that the last few years, I've noticed, where some of these last late season games or last games on the end of the season will be an afternoon game. I remember a couple of years ago, the Stars were in a bit of a race, and there was two afternoon games. The Stars had to beat Minnesota, and before that, the Red Wings had to beat the Blackhawks, and the Red Wings, or no, I can't remember how that played out, but basically they were relying on a Red Wings-Blackhawks game, and I think the Blackhawks won, and that helped the Stars, and then the Stars had that an afternoon game like an hour later, and they had to beat the Wild, and they failed miserably. So they were out of the playoffs, but it was that whole sequence of just like, wow, this is going to be an afternoon of great hockey, and it was on a Sunday, I think.
Yeah.
So in a way, I don't mind that, but yeah, it is a little bit weird that a Calgary-Winnipeg game doesn't get play on CBC. Instead, we'll get to watch
Toronto-Montreal,
mm-hmm. Of course, the forever rivals.
Yeah.
And, you know, a game of no consequence to Toronto. Montreal will probably win it, although they might be resting Price and a bunch of other players. So I'm sure that will be a thrill a minute, and CBC should be just ecstatic.
Of course.
That there's no flex scheduling like the NFL has.
That's right.
Because if there was, I guarantee you the NHL would make sure that was switched.
Mm-hmm. Before we get off the hockey talk, I noticed that you said that RB18, our friend, is going to be making some sort of donation to you based on a bet. Do you want to tell me about what bet you had with RB?
Gladly, because I love this bet. About this time a year ago, RB... Ryan, as he is wont to do, was very critical of the Jets, and he was, I think he had said something to the effect of, you know, next year the Oilers and Flames are going to pass us, pass the Jets. And I was willing to concede Calgary to him because I actually did like what Calgary was doing in terms of their rebuild. But again, just living in this city, knowing what I know about the Oilers, I was not willing to concede him on the Oilers. I knew the Jets were going to be better than the Oilers. I didn't see how the Oilers could be possibly better. So we made the bet, during the summer, after we saw what the Oilers did and what the Jets did, which is funny because, I mean, all the Jets did was add, Perreault, I think one or two of the pieces. The Oilers actually went out. They had, the two goalies. They added Perron. They added a couple other pieces. So mm-hmm. It actually did kind of look like the Oilers were, doing a little bit more with their roster. So, but I basically bet, Ryan that, you know, the Jets would finish ahead of the Oilers in the standings. And then the winner, the loser of that bet was going to have to donate, some of money. I believe it was $150. I'll have to double check, but it was $150 to the winner's, choice of charity.
Okay.
And in, Ryan's case, it'll be to, indirectly to the Stollery, to my, my Extra Life, charity fund.
Yeah.
Extra Life is related to video games. It's basically a 24-hour gaming marathon. And, we'll be playing in November, and I'm raising funds for that. So, and it's in support of, the Children's Hospital, network. And here in Edmonton, it'll be for the Stollery, which is a fund I believe in, big time.
So, for this, the Extra Life, charity that you're doing, I have the website here. I'm gonna post it on the notes for the page, because, then everybody can see where they need to go here, but it's, www.extra-life.org. And then, is there a way, you've got a link here that has, it going straight to you, but is there a way that you can search just Game Time Art on there and find you as well?
I think if you go on the main site, it will search Game Time Art. And if you just type in Game Time Art, it'll go to my page. And also on my website, there'll be a link, gametimeart.net. It'll be a big banner on the right hand side. You won't be able to miss it. And there'll be a link directly to there on gametimeart.net. So, which is a blog that I try to write in, but I haven't written in about 2 months. So.
Okay. Do you have any bets that you want to make with Arby for next season?
You know, someone on Twitter the other day said something and I was like, oh, you know what? I'll take that bet. And then I'm like, no, I gotta be careful. I still think the Jets will be better than the Oilers next year. I don't ever see how the Oilers will be ever better than the Jets. Not in the next 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if anyone wants to take me up on that bet, I'll be doing Extra Life again next year. We'll line up that bet again. And if Ryan wants to take me on that bet, I'll stick by that.
All right, let's take a little break from the interview to go through some housekeeping items and give you some information about this show. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can look us up at Beyond the Handle is the handle for the show, so definitely give us a follow there. We are on Facebook. Do a search for Beyond the Handle, and we will pop right up there for you. If you are not listening to this show via iTunes or Stitcher, you can go to each of those platforms and subscribe to the show. Again, just go in and search for Beyond the Handle. We will pop up there for you. Click on subscribe, and the new episodes will download to your device every week as soon as they are posted, which is nice, easy, and convenient. Of course, if you just want to hear a stream of a specific episode, you can also go to beyondthehandle.podomatic.com and you can find the show right there and listen to any episode that you would like to hear. If you'd like to email me and give me some feedback, recommend a guest, or if you'd like to be a guest yourself, I'd love to hear from you. The email address is beyondthehandle@gmail.com. And again, any feedback via Twitter or via email is very much appreciated. So yes, please reach out to me. We are a part of the Garbage Hill Network of podcasts. This is Winnipeg's first podcast network and features a number of local podcasts from around the city of Winnipeg. You can give them a follow at Garbage Hill on Twitter, and their website is www.garbagehillnetwork.com. All of their podcasts are featured. Some of the ones that I've been listening to lately include Couch Surfin', Witch Police Radio, Loose Ropes Wrestling, and the No One Is Safe podcast. They all have Twitter handles as well, so definitely check out those shows. But you can find everything all in one organized place at the Garbage Hill Network. Again, that's www.garbagehillnetwork.com. So with all that being said, let's get back into the interview. This is Art Middleton, also known as at Game Time Art, also Game Time Smark. And that's very important because we're going to talk about wrestling now here on Beyond the Handle. All right, let's move on to something that I've most looked forward to talking about with you. In 1986, something happened that, I guess, changed your life or got you very interested in something. What happened?
Changed my world forever.
Yes.
I discovered wrestling. I discovered pro wrestling. Happened to be, flipping through channels, I had a single mom, at the time, mm-hmm. and she had met a man who ended up becoming my father. But at the time, I was flipping channels with him, and he was a bit of a wrestling fan at the time. And Saturday afternoon, we were flipping through channels, and, he saw the wrestling program, so he turned to it. And the first thing I saw was, Randy Savage brutally attacking Ricky Steamboat and crushing, air quotes, crushing his larynx. Uh-huh. And I was 6 years old at the time, 6 or 7, I can't remember, but I was mortified. And Ricky Steamboat did a great acting job. He held his neck. He obviously held his breath because he turned red and purple.
He fell off the stretcher.
He fell off the stretcher. Vince McMahon was screaming his head off like Vince McMahon could only do back in the day. And I was mortified, but I was hooked. And I think 2 weeks or something like that later, I come to realize it was kind of the recap. That was, they were airing a clip from an old, Saturday Night's Main Event.
Yeah.
Thing. And, a few weeks later, there's Ricky Steamboat in Hawaii and he's made his recovery and he's swearing vengeance upon Savage at WrestleMania 3.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, I was like, oh my God, this guy was like dead a few weeks ago or however long ago this was. And now he's back and he's going to kick this guy's ass. This is awesome. go to school and hey, have you guys heard about this wrestling? And everyone's like, yeah, we've heard of it. Like, what's taking you so long? Lived a sheltered life as a kid. I'm sorry. And I got to see WrestleMania 3 about a week after it actually aired. One of my friends had a satellite copy, copied it to VHS tape at the time. And we made an afternoon of it and watched WrestleMania 3. And I've been a lifelong wrestling fan ever since.
Good stuff. My moment was also in 1986, and it was a tag team match with Hulk Hogan and Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff against Big John Studd and King Kong Bundy. And that dastardly Orndorff turned on Hogan and gave him the pile driver, and oh.
Yeah, and I think that was just before the Savage thing. So
yeah.
I had never known Orndorff. I think I went like 6 or 7 years. Thinking Orndorff was this villainous bad guy until someone, I think I just learned, it was late 80s until I found out that Orton was actually a good guy at one point. I was like, really? He was a good guy?
It was the angle it was a Hogan angle that was run to death, right? You're running with Hogan and then you turn on him and now you've got a feud.
Yeah, and you're ultra jealous of Hogan after his all of success. And the funny thing is, back in the day, you know, as a kid, I just, you know, every time someone would turn on Hogan, it would be like, wow, these guys are jerks. But looking back on it now, Hogan was an egomaniac. And, I totally sided with Tugboat. I sided with, Randy Savage, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
There, you can never convince me that Randy Savage wasn't wrong in his feud with Hulk Hogan.
No, I'm totally with you. Same with Sid. Sid had a legitimate beef with Hogan.
Hogan was a glory hog the entire way. And I saw the light. I became, a fan of the heels, the bad guys, as it were, and I saw Bobby Heenan's ways. I knew that from that point, Bobby Heenan was the brain, because he saw through the Hogan crap before anyone else did. And yeah, no, I just, but, yeah, as a kid, I said my prayers, ate my vitamins too. I bled red and yellow up until the point where Savage turned on him. And I'm like, okay, yeah, nope. Hogan's a glory hog. Savage all the way.
So you have, a wrestler that you admire who is a local boy to Winnipeg, which is great for a Winnipeg based podcast, but
yes,
Chris Jericho.
Yep.
Yeah. Gets the local cheer here every time his name comes up in Winnipeg. And so how did you become a Jerichoholic?
I had kind of seen him on a couple of different, indie shows here in the province. My dad would always take me to, local wrestling shows, and I can remember seeing Chris Jericho in I think he did a couple of shows for Stampeder. I can't remember what the promotion was, but there was a promotion here back in, oh God, how long ago was it?
There was Stampede, and I know for a while there was kind of a Canadian version of IWA.
Yeah.
That was it.
And he did a couple of one-offs here before I think he went to Japan mm-hmm. for a while. And, that's, so I kind of knew about him then. And then, I was a little bit into ECW at the time as well, and he had joined ECW, started making a name for himself there a little bit, and back in the day, tape trading for ECW was big, and I actually kind of got myself involved in that. Had a few friends in the States that would send me tapes, and I would send them tapes of Stampede Wrestling from up here, and we traded tapes that way. So I got to see some Chris Jericho from ECW, and then when he went to WCW, he was one of the only Canadians. I was a bit of a WCW mark at the time, and he was one of the few Canadians that were on that roster, so instantly went for Jericho, and then he turned heel and cut some memorable promos, and I was hooked. And that was, I think when I became a huge fan was his Chris Jericho Goes to Washington skits.
Do you want to describe the angle to people?
Basically, what had happened is Jericho kind of started this whole crybaby, you know, whiny bit where everything was a conspiracy against him. He lost to Dean Malenko in a match. He lost a match for his title. Dean Malenko had entered, I gotta go back here. So what ended up happening was Dean Malenko lost a title match to him. He wasn't allowed to wrestle Jericho anymore. He left wrestling for a while, Malenko did. And then came back as Ciclope in a battle royal. Only after the battle royal, Jericho was gonna fight Ciclope. Jericho was all cocky about it. He was the cruiserweight champ. The Ciclope wasn't any bother to him. Ciclope took off his mask. And it was Dean Malenko, and Dean Malenko kicked the ever-living crap out of Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
Jericho then protested. He went to J.J. Dillon. J.J. Dillon didn't want to hear any of it. So then he went to Washington, to Congress, the Library of Congress. He waited outside the steps of the White House. He was a conspiracy victim. He held up signs with that goofy-looking ponytail. He would get on the megaphone, and I was a conspiracy victim. And then he went to Washington and he found a clause where, the Library of Congress had rules on WCW
wrestling
standards and practices, which was amazing. It was one of the few things that WCW did right. And it was mostly Jericho, and whoever probably rubber stamped that and said, yeah, this will be great. You know, Congress has the WCW rule book. And he cut some amazing promos at that time about how he was a conspiracy victim. And I just, for someone so whiny, and so he was still an enjoyable character. He was still funny, and he could go in the ring. He was still a great wrestler.
I loved him just because he was such a little prick. And the two things in WCW that I loved the most, one was that when he would make his ring entrance, people would hold up pro Jericho signs. So he would take the sign, you know, Jerichoholic or whatever, hold it up to the camera, and then angrily tear it up. And the second one was the Man of 1,004 Holds in that same feud that you're talking about. Dean Malenko was known as the Man of 1,000 Holds, so Jericho proclaimed himself the Man of 1,004 Holds, which was highlighted by him standing in the ring with basically like a long ledger.
Like from the old dot matrix printers.
Yeah,
and that's the paper that he was using, and just the way he delivered that is just like, Dean, you claim you got 1,001 holds. Well, I counted all the holds I know, 1,004.
And then
he listed them, and half of them were arm bars.
Yep.
Which was so good. And in the Jericho DVDs, he actually explains that they went to commercial. You know, they're like, oh, give him the hook, and they went to commercial, and they came back, and they left him off at 63, and they came back from commercial, and he was like 723 or something like that, which was so amazing. And he was blowing himself up, and he was getting tired going off this list, and the crowd was booing the hell out of him. But he said the secret of that was during the commercial break, he just ranted on the city. He didn't even go through the list. He just ranted on the city to rile them up.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the light went back on, he was like, okay, back to the list, 7,000 or 723, you know, Canadian arm bar kind of thing. And they're like, ah. So it was so masterful. And then he got chased out by Prince IAK, I think it was. And it was so good. And just that and the Goldberg.
The Goldberg angle thing was fantastic, too.
Yeah, yep. Where he mocked Goldberg. He referenced this is Spinal Tap, which was so amazing because he would do these. Goldberg had these grandiose entrances where they'd follow him out of the locker room and the security be around him. Well, Jericho went up that by following him out of the locker room with a big fat guy named Ralphus, wearing a half-cut t-shirt that had a Jiffy marker on it.
Yep.
Listed as Jericho Personal Security. And they would follow him out of the locker room, but he would always get lost in the arena. And he did that bit a couple times. One time he got locked out of the arena completely. Another time, I think he got locked out, and Mortis had to grab him and beat him up outside.
Yeah.
And then the last time, he finally made his way to the entrance, and he was going to get the big Goldberg Sparkler entrance, and he had these like tiny little Fizzler entrances, these tiny little pop Fizzler things that he ended up kicking, but he kicked them so comically because it's not like he wanted to kick him over because it was still pyro.
Yeah.
So he like pretended to kick it, and it was like, oh, this is so good.
It was all golden and obviously took off from there for Chris Jericho when he moved to WWE and the greatest debut I think ever in the history of that company where.
You know what? Secret confession. I missed that debut. I had a work meeting that night.
Oh.
And I knew it was coming. You know, we had the internet, so we knew Jericho was going to make his debut. We knew that was the night and my VHS tape didn't, I had video recorder and my VHS tape didn't work. So I think TSN at the time, they had the Raw shows, so they replayed it, I think, a few days later. But I always hang my head in shame that I didn't get to see one of Jericho's greatest moments live. I had to watch it a few days later.
Oh, it was so good.
But it was such a good – and, you know, I always had – you always get nervous when WCW guys debuted in WWE because you didn't know how Vince was going to be towards them.
Mm-hmm.
But Vince put him right with The Rock, who was the biggest thing going at the time. And it's funny because Jericho said in books and interviews that he hated that promo and he hated how he reacted to it. And I thought that it was brilliant. I think everyone thought it was brilliant.
I think the part that he didn't like, I think there were the part that I loved the most about the promo and I think that Jericho hated was that when the fans started chanting Rocky, he gave the shush, put his finger up to his lips and was like shush to everybody, you know, then.
Yeah.
And he felt that, you know, it took away from the seriousness of the moment, whereas that was my favorite part of the whole thing.
Yeah, and he didn't like the face that he made, like the big puffed out face.
Yeah.
He thought that took away from the seriousness of it, which maybe, you know, looking back, maybe it did. But at the time, I mean, we didn't really expect any better from Jericho because that was kind of what he did in WCW. So
you had listed some other wrestlers and you've mentioned most of them, but there are two that I wanted to get a quick comment on from you because I think they're so great. The first one is Iron Mike Sharp.
Canada's greatest athlete. Yeah, and Iron Mike Sharp is amazing. And at the time, he was someone as a kid that I wanted to gravitate towards because, you know, from the Steel City, Hamilton, and he was listed as Canada's greatest athlete, and then he lost every match.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that was a rub by Vince or what, but, man, he was brutal. I still liked him because he still had that bravado before every match that he was going to win this. And him and Barry Horowitz was another one. How were these guys ever high on themselves? Like, at some point they had to realize, like, you know, I'm going to lose this match. I don't even know why I'm bragging or boasting about this, but, you know, sure, I'm Canada's greatest athlete.
And Iron Mike Sharp had the best selling as well, because no matter how he reacted when he got a move on him, it was the whole,
yeah, he, you know, grunted and groaned like a caveman and the jaw. And it was so perfect as an 80s wrestler.
And the second one is, and I can't believe that you referenced it, The Goon.
The Goon could have been the greatest money-making gimmick of all time. Vince just didn't know what kind of gold he had in The Goon. A guy that he started his matches by literally dropping his gloves. He would come in this full hockey gear. He had a Devil's jersey on, or a mock Devil's jersey on.
Yeah.
He would come to the into the ring. His boots would look like skates. In fact, I think the bottom of his boots for a few of those matches had kind of a point to them at the, you know, they were inverted. They were kind of slanted a little bit.
Yeah, they looked smaller.
Like skate plates.
Yeah, they were smaller than the boot.
Skate plates, which I always thought, you know, like, man, he's going to break his ankles with that thing, with those boots. But, and then he'd come with a stick and gloves and he would literally, the bell would ring, he'd literally toss and drop his gloves, start wailing on the guy, and then, Vince was such a good commentator at the time.
Uh-huh.
Vince would reference every bad penalty that you could possibly have. It was so cliche.
Yeah.
And it was so perfect. And I think he lasted a few matches, then Undertaker buried him. and they threw him to Undertaker, like, here, bury this guy. We don't have any use for him.
He had a fantastic mullet too.
He had the hockey mullet. His finishing move was basically checking someone into the barrier, which was totally pointless because you're supposed to pin the guy, not get a count out. But hey, it worked for the Berserker, so it was going to work for the Goon.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, no, it was such a, I don't know why that gimmick, Vince should have stuck with it. Of all the mistakes Vince has ever made, that was one of his biggest, in my personal opinion.
And the Goon's never going to get over as a top guy, but as a job guy? Come on. Like, you know, a guy that comes out loses? Like, a great gimmick.
Perfect job guy. And, I think Vince was a little bit ahead of his time on that. Although nowadays, with all the CTE going on and the concussion issues, mm-hmm. you know, maybe that'd be maybe a little bit more sensitive of a topic. But,
yeah.
He would have been a perfect guy that just, big tough guy that always lost every fight. We could have named him Zach Stortini for that matter, uh-huh. and it probably would have fit.
If you ever go back to, and I don't know if you have the WWE Network yet, but if you don't.
Oh yeah, always.
Try yep. to find one of the Raws from summer of 1996 early. Me and my boy Poops McKenzie, who's also on Twitter, famously remember there is a Raw where Shawn Michaels is presented with a large birthday cake. And of course, as with any birthday cake, it makes its way into somebody's face, which yep. ended up on that show being Sonny's. And then
yep.
the remnants of the cake are spread out all across the mats outside of the ring. And later on that night, the Goon does a running charge, on somebody and slips. And I think legitimately right. slips and ends up on his back. But on falling on the cake. So for almost 20 years, we referenced the Goon slipping on cake and then, finally saw it again on the network, a few months ago.
Okay. I'm going to look that up after we're done this interview because I remember that scene too. And, and he slipped on icing, which I yep. think Vince probably missed that call. Ice could have said, oh, there's a case of icing.
Yeah. There you go.
yeah. And just if Vince had known his hockey a little bit better, he would have known what kind of gold he had in the Goon.
Speaking of gold, you caught WrestleMania this past Sunday.
You betcha.
So what did you think? What were your expectations of the show going in and what did you think?
I was pretty much like everyone else. I wasn't expecting a whole lot because the buildup was kind of lame. And, it ended up being just a fantastic event front to start to finish. I didn't really expect a whole lot. I thought Brock versus, Reigns was going to be kind of off. I didn't really see how that was going to be a good match. I knew the IC title ladder match was going to be great. And Cena and Rusev I thought would be okay. But other than that, I didn't really see anything there that I thought, you know, these are going to be great matches. And every single one was a pretty good match. And more to the point, got a story. I knew Orton and Rollins was going to be good as well.
Yeah.
But that over-delivered. I both of them were on point, and the final RK was, you know, mwah, perfect.
And for those of you that don't know, a lot of people may not follow wrestling, but
right.
Orton does his finishing move is called the RKO. If you haven't watched wrestling in 10 years, but used to watch back in the heyday, Diamond Dallas Page did a move called the Diamond Cutter.
Diamond Cutter. Yeah.
Which is, if you remember the Diamond Cutter, it's very similar, but, Orton's knack is that he can hit this move out of any situation.
And you know what? All you gotta do is Google RKO out of nowhere.
Yeah.
OUTTA out of nowhere. And you'll see all sorts of memes about it. Orton hitting this, people superimposing Orton onto people falling and, off of swings and stuff and off of buildings and stuff. And it's so good. But that's where that came from.
So in this case, the finish of this match was that Orton is down pretty much on all fours, out for the count, and Seth Rollins is going to give him what he calls his curb stomp as a finishing move, which is where he puts foot on the back of the guy's head and drives it into the mat. But
yeah,
Rollins puts his foot on the back of Orton's head, and Orton springs him up into the air. And as Rollins is coming down, Orton catches him in an RKO.
And there's one that Orton did way back in the day with, Evan Bourne.
Oh, yeah.
Evan Bourne did a 450 splash, which is basically, I think, like a backflip off the top turnbuckle.
A shooting star splash, yeah.
Or a shooting star splash. But and Orton would caught him in the air as he was doing this shooting star splash, this front flip splash, and caught him and did the RKO. This one at WrestleMania pretty much topped that because it was just how he was able to spring. Rollins went for the curb stomp, and the moment Rollins put his foot on basically Orton's shoulders, Orton straightens right out, which springs Seth about a good, 15, 20 feet into the air, And then as he comes down, Orton catches him. It was brilliant.
The other big thing on the WrestleMania card that wasn't, didn't involve any wrestling at all was that, they have, Triple H and Stephanie McMahon in the ring, both whom are legitimately, responsible for running the company along with Vince McMahon, but are portrayed as massive heels. So the fans hate them. And they announce the size of the audience for the night and then take full responsibility as good heels will. Claim ownership of the fans, are getting booed on. And then that brings out The Rock, who I'm sure everybody knows. The Rock comes to the ring, cuts a promo, and then gets called down and chewed out by Stephanie McMahon, who orders him to leave the ring. The Rock feigns like he's going to do it. Of course, you know that Rock's not going to leave, kind of hanging his head. And you're wondering, what's he going to do? And all of a sudden, he wanders around to the front side, the camera side of the ring, and there's this buzz in the crowd because Ronda Rousey is sitting there. And Ronda Rousey is the biggest, probably outside of boxing right now, is the biggest pay-per-view draw in the world.
Probably the scariest woman on the planet, really.
And brings Ronda Rousey with him back into the ring to kind of give Stephanie and Triple H their just desserts. And it was just so well done. It was so unexpected and so well done.
It really was. And it's kind of funny because I think they showed Rousey earlier in the show. It's like, oh, hey, look who's here. But they did it for like 2 seconds and you just kind of, and like you said, they were on the camera side. So it's not like we saw them. In every other shot, they were kind of outside, out of mind after a while. And if you followed it, the event on Twitter, and people were live tweeting from the event, and they said, oh yeah, Rousey's here, and there was a big commotion. And then, during the Rock thing, he left, and you're kind of sitting there like, wow, Rock's not just going to leave, is he? And he goes and walks around and saunters to Rousey, and then you're like, oh snap, I forgot Rousey was there.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? The one part I loved is that as soon as they showed Rousey, my thoughts went back to, well, big deal. Rousey was shown or seen taking pictures and cheering on Steph back at SummerSlam last year. So Rousey and Steph are kind of cool with each other. But they instantly address that. And Steph's like, oh, this is going to be embarrassing for you, Rock. This is my girl. She won't, you know, I love this girl. She loves me. And then just the look on Rousey's face was like, no, I really don't know you. And then she hip tosses Triple H. And it was so good, and that'll probably set up, they aren't really sure, but it sounds like it might set up a SummerSlam angle.
Mm-hmm.
Although her agent came out a couple days later and like, no, she's done with WWE. But, I think the best part, and this is the thing I love about Twitter, Dana White's reaction.
Yeah.
I don't think Dana White knew that this was going to happen right away.
And Dana White is the president of the UFC.
White's the president of the UFC, and Rousey's basically his meal ticket for the women's division of UFC. There really is no other woman fighter. I think if you went to even a casual UFC fan, they can name Rousey and that would be maybe it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like UFC and I'm pretty much stuck at Rousey. So his initial reaction on Twitter was this weird emoji where he kind of has this big wide-eyed emoji going on. and it's just like, oh, so he's completely off guard by this. And then I think 5 minutes later he tweets out, oh, seen my girl Rousey in WrestleMania, like, good girl. And I'm like, yeah, that's to cover up the fact that, you know, you weren't really completely down with this. So another reason why I love Twitter is sometimes reactions like that, you get those little nuggets where instant reaction from someone else that's not really directly involved, and it was so good.
One more thing on the WrestleMania piece that I wanted to get your opinion on. You know, Brock Lesnar has been back with the WWE now for 3 years and has been great the whole way through, but I think has been for the first 2 years, I think there were moments where he was misused. But since the win over The Undertaker a year ago, the way that they've portrayed this guy over the last year has been, you know, for all the things that I think they've done wrong recently, just the most fabulous thing that they've done with somebody in, I can't even remember how long.
I fully agree. And, you know, I think a lot of fans got upset when he beat Taker and that was the end of the streak. And everyone thought, you know, that should be going to a young upstart. That should be going to a Seth Rollins, a Bray Wyatt, someone that the WWE is going to build around. And how could they build around Brock? I think it was also dependent on the whole, you know, Brock re-signing. I don't think if Brock had re-signed, and decided, okay, you know what, I'm done. I'm going to UFC, this summer, then I think it would have been a bit of a waste. But yeah, you're right. After the after the Taker thing, they built him up as this ass kicker. His matches with Cena were beautifully brutal matches. And full credit to Cena. And I don't think Cena gets enough credit at times for adjusting his style at times. Cena's a better wrestler than a lot of people give him credit for, I find. But yeah, it was just, and he's a guy that'll massacre you just straight ahead. And in Raw, he was, again, proof that just, he doesn't give, I'm not going to say too many bad words here, but he doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
He will destroy you no matter who you are. The only person he won't destroy is Paul Heyman. And even then, we're not so sure he won't do that. He's a monster, and that's perfect. And so now I'm a little bit more okay with him beating Taker. I'm still not happy with it, but who is? But, yeah, the way they built him up, and this past Monday was perfect. They had him go on a rampage, destroy everyone, destroy the announcers, and they've suspended him, air quotes. And now he won't be back until SummerSlam or whatever. And that's perfect. He still gets to keep his contract, and he's still this badass that everyone will cheer the hell out of when he gets back.
Yeah, and his matches are different than anything else, because most matches, you know, end up having both guys get some offense in, you know, good guy gets off, you know, his offense at the start, the bad guy builds his heat over the course of the match, then there's a comeback and they trade near falls and that's kind of the end of it. And then they go back and forth with who wins these matches over time, which gets nobody over. Whereas with Brock, right. Brock comes in and he spends, what, 15 or 20 minutes just like shit kicking whoever he's wrestling, throwing them around, physically dominating them, mocking them. And it's just like, you don't see that stuff anymore. And then they'll try to have a quick, you know, comeback near the end for the good guy. And, but in the end, you know, Brock comes off as this like unstoppable dominant force like we've never seen in years.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think his UFC background helps in that, because now we know he's a legitimate ass kicker. Mm-hmm. We know he can legitimately beat people up. And we kind of knew that in his first WWE run too, but it's just, you know, there was always the like, oh, who would win a fight? Angle, a legit fight. Who would win? Angle or Lesnar? And I know that was always a big thing back in the day, was who would win in a wrestling match between those two. But we knew Lesnar had some real skill fighting ability in him. And the UFC helps that, but his matches with Cena, the match he had at the Rumble with Cena and Seth, where he basically destroyed both of them. And even Seth was, you know, the only way that they can get over Brock is, you know, by hook and by crook, you know, by a couple lucky shots.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of, the second Cena match, it's funny because, you know, they had Cena kind of look better in that one. He did look better, but it was only because Brock kind of threw himself into a wall or something like that. I think he threw him in a wall or a post and basically injured himself, which gave Cena an opening.
Yeah.
So even then, but his matches feel so chaotic and they kind of have a twinge of reality to him. Like that first match he had with Cena, it felt real. And the match with Reigns, they were, you know, to bring out another indie inside wrestling term, they were potatoing each other. They weren't, they were basically really hitting each other. They were legitimately muscling each other up they were literally picking themselves up, and, you know, they weren't, you know, the whole dance of wrestling where, you know, you're being picked up for a body slam, but the guy kind of jumps into it. Reigns wasn't jumping into anything. He was potatoing Brock the entire time. And, Brock was still tossing him around. And I think that's why Reigns was laughing through it, because Reigns has probably never been manhandled like that. And that's what makes a Brock match so great, is he can legitimately do that to even the biggest guys.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And again, if, you know, I know there's people out there that are not legitimately never been wrestling fans, but if you were a wrestling fan at some point and you want to see something great, go find WrestleMania 31 and check it out, because it was awesome. Before we sign off for this Beyond the Handle interview, I always like to ask, and especially for somebody that is not actually in Winnipeg, but is communicating always with members of Winnipeg's Twitter community, what is your favorite thing about our Twitter community?
You know, I've actually kind of grown to like the self-loathing a little bit. I've kind of endeared to that a little bit. It's kind of funny to watch. Just, people take shots at not only the Jets, but, you know, just the city itself or the province. Like I said, I've been there once. I look forward to going there again. I kind of think of it as an Edmonton Junior.
I'm sure people will appreciate that.
there's more self-loathing right there. But, you know, and I only think of it that way because I think when the Jets left, and there'll be people from Winnipeg that have said this, the city stagnated a little bit and they kind of got left behind a little bit. I don't think Edmonton, I kind of see Edmonton in Winnipeg and what could have happened to Edmonton had, they lost the Oilers. Mm-hmm. The city still would have grown, but maybe not as much. And the city probably would have been there, but maybe not as much. So, and, you know, Winnipeg people are much like Saskatchewan people, much like, and again, there's more self-loathing.
Oh, yeah.
We're nothing like Saskatchewan people, but, having, I'm a Saskatchewanite. I know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a good down-to-earth, you know, hometown, you know, you're never bigger than your city, a small community type feel to it. And I love that about, you know, about Winnipeg, about Edmonton, about any, basically any town in Saskatchewan. I love that kind of camaraderie about that city. So, that's what endears me to Winnipeg. And, it's kind of funny. There's, for my work, we have a branch in Winnipeg. And I've always said, you know, if you guys want to move me to Winnipeg and work at the branch at Winnipeg, I would gladly accept it. I would have to work on convincing my girlfriend, who's a lifer here in Edmonton. I'd probably get overruled on that, but I myself would be game to go to Winnipeg anytime and move there. More Jets games and beyond the -40 degree, cold winters and, giant mosquitoes in the summer. I can't see how it'd be any different from living in Edmonton, really.
And plus you can go to one of Pappy's Jets parties and meet all us wacky people.
Exactly. And, I've always thought, man, maybe I can, like I said, eventually I'll get myself down there for a game or two. And, the day I get myself lined up for a couple of Jets games and know I'm going to Winnipeg, I'll be on the horn with Poppy and saying, okay, can we get a Jets party going while I'm down there? Cause, I want to be part of that.
So just before we sign off, do you want to talk about Extra Life one more time?
Yeah. The link's on the description. It'll be on gametimeart.net. That'll be the quickest link. It's for support of the Children's Hospital Network, here at Edmonton. And for what I'm doing, it's for the Stollery Children's Fund. It's basically a 24-hour gaming marathon. I'll be going in at 2:00 in the afternoon, staying up for 24 hours, playing video games, probably on my Xbox One. Although I have a couple friends who say we'll do board games this year. So, and we'll probably do it on Skype. So, and again, I'm on, or not Skype, sorry, Twitch. And you can follow me on Twitch at GameTimeArt. Yeah, no, and it's for a great cause, and I know there's a Winnipeg branch, so if you want to donate to the local Winnipeg branch, I know they support the Winnipeg Children's Hospital there, and there's some good gamers from Winnipeg as well that'll be doing that. So it's a great cause. I love the Children's Hospital Network. You know, why not help kids?
Perfect, and I'll make sure to put the link up as well with the post for this interview. So
you bet.
So everybody, this is Art Middleton, speaking with me today. You can find him on Twitter with two handles. His primary handle is @GameTimeArt with, I think the more general talk, especially surrounding sports and the Jets, but also just, you know, general Twitter thoughts. And then
every so often I throw a curveball in there with political talk or music. Yep.
And then if you want to hear, Art's thoughts on pro wrestling and you're a wrestling fan, a fantastic follow @GameTimeSmark as well. Again, he's kind enough to separate the two, which is something that I really should learn how to do as well.
I'm sure my followers on the main account, appreciate not having to hear the greatness of, Seth Rollins every single Monday.
So thank you very much, Art, for coming on the Beyond the Handle this week.
Thank you for having me. It was an honor.
So there you have it. That was Art Middleton, known as @GameTimeArt and @GameTimeSmark on Twitter, speaking with me today about sports and professional wrestling, a big member of Winnipeg's Twitter community, but a resident of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. So thank you very much, Art, for speaking with me on Good Friday via Skype, and I hope that everybody enjoyed the interview as much as I did. If you want to support Extra Life, which is a 24-hour gaming marathon that raises money for the Children's Miracle Network. The website is www.extra-life.org/participant/gametimeart, Or there's also going to be a banner over at gametimeart.net to make it easier for people to reach. And I will also post the links to this show on the episode notes for today's episode. So please check that out. Because we spoke about professional wrestling today, I wanted to give a couple of special shout-outs to the Loose Ropes Wrestling Podcast, which can be found over at the Garbage Hill Network. That is garbagehillnetwork.com. They are also on Twitter at loose_ropes_FM. And that is a great wrestling podcast that comes out every week. You can download the show or you can go over to UMFM and find them on UMFM's schedule. And also, you should give a follow to at PCW Andrew. That is Andrew Shellcross, and he runs PCW, which is Premier Championship Wrestling, which is an excellent promotion here in the city of Winnipeg. Puts on some great shows and knows a lot about professional wrestling, so definitely give him a follow as well. He was on episode 2 of the podcast and was really fun to speak with. So, as we do with every episode, we are going to wrap up with the song that you've been hearing throughout the show. I'm very pleased to say that this is a local band right here in Winnipeg. They are called The New Wild. They actually recently hit the top of the charts on both UMFM and CKUW, and well-deserved. They have a great EP out called The New Wild. You can find them on Bandcamp. You can follow them over on Twitter, and I'm going to just double-check their address right now. You can find them at The New Wild on Twitter, so how about that? Give them a follow on Twitter. Try to get your hands on this EP. Again, you can find it on iTunes. You can find it on Bandcamp. It's a great listen. These are great guys. They helped me out tremendously about a month ago for the CKUW fund drive. So definitely pick up this music. You won't regret it. So this is The New Wild. The track is called Whale. You've been listening to Beyond the Handle. Thank you very much and have a great week.